Recycling questions that folks have asked me on Twitter in the past few days. Typically, when I'm winding down for the evening, I hop on Twitter and start going through all of the questions folks have sent in. They usually attach photos and videos. If you have any interest in taking a peek, go ahead and head to Char Dreizen on Twitter, CharDreizen. But we're going to go through 15 questions that span a huge range of topics, from composting and recycling to waste reduction and packaging choice, if you have multiple options to choose from. So we'll cover a whole smattering of different topics today. The first one we have at hand is someone who's curious about whether they can recycle thick, glossy, shiny junk mail and brochures that come in the mail. The answer is yes. Paper mills can process and recycle junk mail, no problem. The glossy coatings and kind of lamination that occurs on paper and junk mail is no problem to process. It's different than the plastic linings that we have on ice cream tubs and coffee cups that can sometimes be problematic for different paper mills processes. So junk mail is really good to go. You also don't have to be worried about the plastic windows in envelopes that junk mail might come in. Plastic windows and envelopes aren't a problem. They're really easy for paper mills to pull out, just like staples. The one thing to be aware of and cautious of when it comes to junk mail is making sure you pull out any credit cards and the adhesive that credit cards are stuck to paper on if you do happen to be getting any credit card offers in your own junk mail. But as a whole, the category is something safe that almost every community in the U.S. can accept for recycling. The second question we have today is whether paper or plastic produce labels and stickers on fruits and vegetables can be compostable and why they might cause a problem. So the reason that produce stickers do cause problems in composting processes is because they are not typically made of paper. They are almost always made of conventional plastic, which we cannot compost. So if you run that through a composting process, you're going to have little plastic produce stickers left over in the soil product that you're hoping to sell to gardeners and organic farms and other end markets for compost. So it's really important that all of those produce stickers are removed on the front end. There are compostable alternatives out there on the market, but they have made only really minor market penetration to date. It's a really low-hanging fruit policy that would really make sense to regulate, to either ban produce stickers if they're not absolutely essential, or to require compostable produce stickers to be used. There's also some really exciting innovation taking place using lasers and kind of strategies to kind of laser imprint and carve out a kind of produce number directly into the skin of melon and avocado and some thicker fruits and vegetables that can kind of hold up to that. So hopefully we'll have less produce stickers as a whole in the future, but for the time being, they do all need to be removed from the peels and rinds and food scraps that you might be generating. On to question three, whether hangers are recyclable, both metal and plastic ones. Hangers are unfortunately in the category of items that we call tanglers. So they get caught up and jam recycling equipment in recycling facilities. So unfortunately, hangers, no matter what they're made of, really can't be accepted in most recycling programs. There are a couple exceptions where some communities accept metal hangers that don't have quite so much of a problem. There are typically communities that have dual stream recycling where metal will be collected with containers and it's not all in a single stream program getting sorted at a material recovery facility or MRF, but the vast majority of programs aren't able to accept hangers because they have the same impact on recycling equipment that garden hoses or Christmas lights or wires and cords do as a whole, and just jam equipment and cause facilities to have to shut down typically multiple times a day to be cut out and extricated by staff using box cutters. So we definitely want to prevent that as much as possible. Plastic hangers, unfortunately, always really have to go to the trash. Metal hangers, if you aren't in one of those very few communities that can accept them, can go to metal scrap metal drop-offs if you do have one available to you. Unfortunately, the nearest one to me is quite a long car drive away, so I'm typically putting them in the trash, even though it pains me to do so. Our next question is about batteries and whether batteries can be recycled, how to go about recycling them if you can. Batteries are really tricky. They are a huge threat to solid waste programs, largely due to the reality that they are a huge source of fires. Whether you put them in the trash or in the recycling curbside, they are really liable to start a fire, especially during summer months and when temperatures are hotter, but it can occur anytime, you know, 365 days a year. Not all batteries are quite so risky as others, but as a whole, they're generally all considered household hazardous waste as a whole, and they are often that kind of extra fire risk. Solid waste management programs try very hard to prevent them and ban them from solid waste in the vast majority of programs. They're considered often a part of universal waste, which is a category of materials that we're really trying to get out of the main solid waste, trash, and recycling stream. So we always are wanting to be sure that, you know, any electronics, any, you know, singing birthday cards with batteries are never put into the recycling stream nor the trash stream, and they're always brought to a separate drop-off in some way, shape, or form. That can be a household hazardous waste drop-off, which is probably the most common option nationwide, or a recycling drop-off for batteries, which is less common altogether. You can find the nearest one to you at Call to Recycle, which is a really great platform to figure out where your nearest battery drop-off is and for what kind of batteries, whether they accept rechargeables or disposable single-use batteries. But we are really excited to see a huge growth of extended producer responsibility laws for batteries that require manufacturers of batteries to provide more recycling options for folks who use batteries. So for instance, in Washington, D.C., where I am, we'll have battery legislation that will come online January 1st of 2023 that will require about 70 new drop-offs for batteries citywide, about one drop-off per 10,000 residents, and we have about 700,000 residents. So we're really excited that we're going to have a lot more battery recycling opportunities in the near future, not just the few retailers that provide battery drop-off recycling today and our household hazardous waste program for batteries. So make sure whatever you do, you don't put them into your recycling bin or your trash bin. You bring them somewhere safe where they can be managed. Hopefully that's recycling, but even if it needs to be managed as household hazardous waste and go to a contained safe facility, that's a better end of life story for them. Okay, what can someone do with old pillows? Can they be recycled? Pillows are tough. Same with mattresses and bedding as a whole. A lot of donation and reuse programs, unfortunately, don't accept pillows and a lot of other bedding due to sanitary concerns. Animal shelters were a place that a lot of folks were able to donate pillows before the pandemic, but unfortunately, after COVID started to unfold, a lot of programs that used to accept pillows for, you know, beds for cats and dogs at animal shelters and other uses have stopped that practice due to health concerns. I'm not sure I entirely follow the logic there, knowing that COVID doesn't often spread through surface contact, but that is a reality that we are now living in, that pillows are much harder to find a place to donate than they were before. One of the tricky things about recycling them is that they are often made of many, many different materials, and it's really hard to sort them from one another. So kind of your standard cloth pillow with down or down alternative or foam interior, sure, the pillowcase could be brought to a textile recycling program, but depending on what that insert is made of, it might be more reusable or recyclable, or it might not. But as a whole, there really isn't robust infrastructure yet developed to recycle pillows. They are likely going to have to go into the trash if you can't find a good place to donate and reuse them, unfortunately. There has been a lot of progress on mattress recycling nationwide. Some mattress recycling programs do accept pillows as well. It is not the default posture for those programs, but knowing that there has been a lot of movement in requiring manufacturers of mattresses to provide end-of-life collection for them and recycling for them, hopefully that will expand to include pillows before too long. Definitely would be kind of a logical sister material to be incorporated into those programs. The next question that we have is about kitchen scales and how can someone dispose of an old kitchen scale that's no longer working properly? Can they bring it to an electronics recycling drop-off? What can they do with it? Well, the answer is that unfortunately, there's probably not a good recycling solution to date. Most electronics programs are developed and stood up by manufacturers of kind of conventional consumer electronics like TVs, computers, speakers, you name it. Unfortunately, kitchen appliances and the big universe of other electronic items that don't fall into that conventional category of TV, computer, printer, bones are typically excluded and can't be managed in the same way. They're not accepted by those programs because they're really just not funded by manufacturers of kitchen appliances and companies that might make a kitchen scale. That's not to say that's the way it should be, though. Manufacturers of a lot of kitchen appliances have a huge opportunity to provide take-back programs and drop-off programs for folks to use. A kitchen scale would be a great item to reuse different components of and recycle different components of, being primarily made of metal, having batteries incorporated, and also often some plastic components. So unless the specific manufacturer has a take-back program, I would hearken I guess that almost all electronics drop-offs that you might have access to unfortunately wouldn't accept a kitchen scale. It is worth triple checking in your locality and at retailers like Best Buy and others that provide electronics recycling, but it's probably going to be a really tough sell there. So I wish there was a better solution. Do try and remove the batteries from it if you do end up trashing it, knowing that batteries, of course, are nothing that we want to manage in the conventional trash and recycling systems curbside. Next question we have is about caps and spout attachments for cartons. We have someone who's been removing them for their recycling life and is curious if they should actually leave them on. It's a really great question because, much like conventional plastic bottles, cartons are in the same boat that you always want to reattach the cap or the spout, or the cap and the spout, depending on the carton that you have at hand, in order for those pieces to be recycled. Unfortunately, items that are under that 2-inch by 2-inch size threshold in U.S. curbside recycling systems really can't be effectively sorted by recycling facilities. So a cap, just like, you know, it works for a conventional PET soda bottle, for a carton, needs to be reattached to be recycled effectively. It cannot be recycled alone, so best to reattach. Always make sure to rinse out the carton that you have at hand before tossing into a blue bin with the cap back on. About halfway through here, our next question is about HVAC and HEPA filters and whether they're recyclable or not. This is a really great question. When I was out running recycling routes early in the morning, HVAC filters for air conditioning, air filtration, are one of the most common contaminants we would definitely see. I would say they were up there with window blinds, so not as common as our always ubiquitous plastic bag contamination, but something that you would definitely see every morning in one household or another. And I definitely think I get why. It looks like it's pretty papery, foamy, and like materials you might be familiar with in packaging. But of course, filters are not packaging or printed paper products that curbside recycling programs typically accept. They're not made of materials that can be recycled and handled in the curbside system. So best to always make sure they're going into the trash and not into the recycling stream, unfortunately. The person who asked actually did have someone chime in, though, and mention that AirThreads, a washable HVAC filter, is one opportunity to reduce some waste and avoid single-use filters and try a reusable alternative. I am dying to try these. I haven't been able to get my hands on them yet, but I am super excited to give them a go. And knowing that we all use air filters and swap them out and toss out old ones on a pretty frequent basis, probably more frequent than we ever had in the past during the pandemic, these days, whether in your home or office building or place of work. But I think this is one opportunity to really try and reduce single waste, and especially a single use item that doesn't have a really kind of easy recyclable pathway available to it. The next question we have is about plastic film and specifically bread bags, the bags that bread come in that we know many of can be brought to store drop-off, and whether any paper labels that are attached to them need to be removed. This is a great question. It's one of the really problematic contaminants for the plastic bag and film stream. Paper labels are impossible for plastic film recyclers to remove. They are a really, really challenging contaminant, and once they get dispersed in the plastic film recycling process, those little itty-bitty fibers really mess up the quality of the plastic film that's being recycled. So they're one of the biggest priority items to ensure we don't inadvertently introduce into the plastic film recycling stream when we're bringing pure polyethylene film items into the store drop-off stream. We have a whole episode on this if you would care to kind of dive into all of the nuances, but suffice it to say that yes, if you are picking up a loaf of bread at your farmer's market and it has a paper label, make sure to remove that paper label. They can be really tricky to peel off once they're adhered to the plastic film. So I honestly often cut them out. I fight with them for 5 seconds, and if I'm not making traction, I take a pair of scissors and cut it out. The same goes for Amazon shipping mailers, the kind of bubble wrap mailers that a lot of us get when ordering from Amazon that might be white and blue or white and charcoal increasingly that we're seeing, also can be recycled via store drop-off, but they have a paper shipping label on them. So just like a bread bag that might have a paper label, an Amazon shipping mailer or any shipping mailer that's designated for store drop-off with a how to recycle label or otherwise, definitely needs to have that paper label removed. I'm almost always cutting it out though, because they are really hard to peel off. Super, super tough to peel off. Our next question here is about a maybe PVC, maybe PET plastic clamshell. This is a great video someone submitted, kind of walking us through this clamshell kind of package for a piece of hardware. I feel like this is kind of the iconic example of like, you're walking down a hardware store aisle, there's hammers and pliers and you name it in plastic packaging, often with a paper backing where the branding and product information is displayed, that you have to really wrestle with and get out. One of my favorite pieces of TV ever recorded is Curb Your Enthusiasm's episode where Larry David is trying to open a pack of headphones with scissors that are made of PVC, and he's like, you know, overwrought trying to open this thing and injures himself in the process. PVC packaging can be really tough for a user to get inside of. And it's really hard to tell whether it's PVC or PET if it's not labeled with a resin identification code. Here, this example is not labeled. So we are kind of going to do some guesswork here on which it is. Most curbside recycling programs would accept that if it was PET, if it was number one polyethylene terephthalate, but not if it was number three polyvinyl chloride, PVC. So there's a couple ways we can go about trying to determine which it is. This is not a surefire science, but this is the best we can do if we don't have a resin identification code. So first, we can bend a corner of the package. If you bend it and you see a white line, that's typically going to be a PVC package. If you really don't see much kind of color appearing there when the plastic is bent, it's still pretty clear, probably PET. PVC is also typically much thicker and firmer, PET a little more flexible and malleable. That's, again, really tough because depending on how thick that plastic is, it might really impact whether it feels super, super firm or pretty flexible. The last way we can kind of take a look is whether it has a bluish tint or is really pretty genuinely transparent. PVC can often have a bluish tint to it if you hold it up to a light. PET really won't unless it's been intentionally designed to have that. In this case, it really likely wouldn't if it was just for a piece of hardware. So if it does look like it has a bluish tint, has a white crease when you bend it, probably PVC. Let's probably toss that into the trash. If it's looking clear and somewhat flexible, you should probably give it a go in the recycling. But again, this is a really tough one. As a whole, we want to only recycle when we're sure of an item. So if we're feeling iffy about it, let's just not recycle it to be better safe than sorry. But if you are feeling like it's really malleable and flexible, it's clear, it's not generating a white line, doesn't have a bluish tint, I might lean in that direction. Reasonable minds could differ. We have a question here as well about the rings for a six-pack container and whether they are recyclable. We have, of course, that kind of conventional soft film six-pack, kind of set of rings that, you know, folks have unfortunately seen a lot of images of turtles and wildlife being stuck in that we often snip with scissors before disposing of. We're not talking about that here, though. We're talking about some of the more newer wave rigid plastic holders. In this example, kind of the same format you might see for a six pack, but for a pack of two almond milks that someone purchased at a big box store. No resin identification code. Can they be recycled or not? Unfortunately for these items, because they're flat and will often get missorted as paper, we really don't want to be recycling them because unfortunately they're very unlikely going to make their way down in a recycling facility to an optical sorter to be sorted into a plastic bale. The loops on them as well make them really ripe to get tangled into recycling equipment, just like those tanglers and hangers that we talked about before. So for these, we'll really want to be keeping them into the trash. However, a lot of grocery stores and breweries do collect them for reuse. So if you have a favorite nearby, definitely worth seeing if they'll accept them back to reuse them. Okay, we're down to our last three questions. We have one here about workbooks with soft covers. You know, I'm kind of imagining no photo here provided, but something that you might have gotten in elementary school. Almost universally, recycling programs can always accept soft cover notebooks as long as they don't have a spiral binding. So if it's just kind of a soft cover, even if it has a glossy, plasticky feeling, that's really going to be fine for paper mills to process. If it does have a spiral bound kind of metal or plastic piece, you'll just want to remove that. Or if you aren't feeling interested in removing it, better to trash than contaminate the paper recycling stream for that. Second to last question here, whether it's okay to put very small condiment cups into a bigger plastic container to be recycled. This person I love is picking up on that size threshold. They know that that little condiment cup is going to be too small to be recycled on its own, and is kind of thinking creatively about other opportunities to recycle it. And I'm tracking with them. I think for a little condiment cup, if it's labeled with a number one PET resin identification code, which most are, not all, but most, that should really hypothetically be fine to put into a PET bottle and drop into a recycling bin and be sorted effectively at a recycling facility. The one qualifier I would add is if we are not positive what resin that little condiment cup is, we probably don't want to be risking contaminating that plastic that's going to be heading to a PET bale with any other kind of material. But if we feel really good about that, if it's labeled and we know for sure, then that would be pretty fine to do, to have it kind of carry along with it in the recycling facility. And our last question here that we're going to end on is, I think, a really excellent one, and is one, frankly, that I wrestle with when shopping and refilling my hand soap on a regular basis. A lot of us have probably seen refills becoming more and more of a presence for both dish soap and hand soap as of the past handful of years. I think definitely pretty ubiquitous now on most store shelves when you really had to seek them out in years prior. This person is curious whether it makes more sense to buy a refill bag, a multi-laminate stand-up pouch, or to buy a big rigid plastic jug of liquid hand soap as a refill, because those are recyclable. They know the multi-laminate pouch is not. This is an excellent question because it so artfully highlights two of the biggest trade-offs in sustainable packaging and recycling. We think about sustainable packaging from a carbon footprint lens as well as a circularity lens, and we think about the trade-offs between the two. It's very rare that one material and one packaging format performs the best on both sides of those equations. Sometimes it happens, but not always, not often, and not in this case. So we know here that the multi-laminate stand-up pouch is going to be the lowest carbon option for sure. It's going to be using the least amount of material. It's going to have the lowest carbon footprint on a gram by gram, pound for pound basis than a really big, heavy, rigid plastic container. But unfortunately, because it has layers of plastic and metal, it would not be accepted in the store drop-off stream for plastic film, nor would it be accepted in the curbside system because it's flexible plastic. When we think about that big, heavy plastic jug, it's going to be using a lot more carbon, a lot more plastic by weight, but of course have a really good end of life story in the vast majority of U.S. recycling programs, because they're going to be made of number two high density polyethylene, which is accepted in the vast majority of places, just like milk jugs. So this is a tough one. And to be honest, it kind of comes down to one's own or a company's kind of internal priorities about sustainable packaging. Because not all things are held equal, there are different trade-offs between the two. I think reasonable minds could really differ. If you feel for sure that carbon is the direction that you feel most strong about and you want to pick the lowest carbon option with all else kind of off the table, definitely go with that refill bag. If you feel like circularity is the biggest priority for you and carbon be damned, you really want to make sure an item is recycled, not heading to a landfill or waste to energy facility, then that big heavy jug is you know, your go-to. You can also kind of play this out when it comes to other packaging considerations. A water bottle versus a carton of water that we're now seeing versus an aluminum can, glass bottle. Kind of that same set of considerations of the carbon footprint versus circularity comes into play for all of those. I, to be honest, typically buy the refill bag of soap, knowing that it is just so much less carbon. And I'm really curious what this person will do, though, and what you would do as well. That brings us to the last of our 15 questions today for our 15th episode of Waste 360's Unpacking Recycling with Charlotte. It has been so much fun and a really nice change of pace to go through questions that I've had in and to take a look at all of these photos and videos together. Would be really curious about what additional questions you have, what topics you'd like us to cover next, please feel free to give us a shout directly in the comments of this video on YouTube, on Waste360's website, or on Twitter, giving me a shout at Char Dreizen, CharDreizen, or on Instagram at Char Recycles. Thanks so much for joining us, and really looking forward to next time.